sitting at the table with your family might be the most important table of all for some people. And, you know, maybe that's your chosen family. Maybe that's your blood level family, whatever it is. But like, I feel like sometimes we, you know, we might have a passion, we might have an art, and we really want to succeed at it. We really want to be great at it. We really want to do well. But I also think that there is a flaw in a person that makes that the most important thing in their life, because it is and can be important. And I think it should be precious. And I think it is, I think you should be grateful if you get to be an artist in life and you get to do something you love. I do really think that there is a lot of gratitude and appreciation to be had for that. But at the end of the day, I really think what really is going to matter are the people and the relationships you have. And there are just so many more important things than money and success.
This is Way of the Artist with Brandon Colby Cook and Evan Schulte.
Exploring the challenges of the creative call.
So that you can claim your own path.
And make your life a work of art.
All right, Evan, it's that time, that sweet, sweet podcast time. Okay, so this one, Evan and I want to talk about the practicality in art, in life, how they go together. We kind of have an interesting take on it, I think. We're going to dive into this a little bit deeper. I do feel like this is a topic we do kind of always navigate around a little bit, but I don't know if we've come at it head on for at least for a while. And what I'm interested about this is that with art, sometimes I think practical and artistry, they kind of seem to be almost like butting heads. And something you brought up, Evan, and I wanted to throw this in at the beginning, is like that saying, you got to burn your bridges. You know, you can't, it's a one-way boat. You know, you land and you burn the boats, you know, this type of saying. And you pointed out that maybe for some people that works, but then there are other people that doesn't work. It actually creates it creates this kind of desperation, I think, and it creates some other things maybe where people don't actually flourish. I know for me, there have been times where burning my boats and kind of just going with one direction, really committing, it works. But I always find for me, it's quite temporary. It's not a long-lasting, sustainable approach. And something that was presented to me a lot when I was younger, because I was like, I'm going to be an actor and a filmmaker. And I was like all about it. And I remember, you know, even my dad saying like, well, come up with a backup plan and all this stuff. And that used to just irk me so much. And I think it's a reframe. I don't think it's a backup plan. I think that's the wrong frame on having a boat or not burning your bridge. It's more like, what I would say is have a plan B and a plan C and a plan D. Don't just think that you're going to go straight and you're going to get what you want. Like, I think a lot of people go into the arts and they think very naively, like, I'm going to show up to Hollywood. They're going to love me. I'm going to get that audition and they're going to cast me. And then all of a sudden, 3, 4, 5 years later, you haven't really gotten a big role and you put all your life savings into like this audition road in Hollywood and it's not working out, you know, that type of thing. Whereas I might say, well, look, I would look at it this way. If you go and you try that and it doesn't work, it's not working, you're not getting the results you want after a couple of years, I might say, well, why don't you look at maybe like making an independent film? Why don't you think about maybe writing a script? Why don't you start a YouTube channel? Maybe there's a different approach. And I think that's where the plan B, plan C, you know, whatever. Think of maybe a more practical way in which you can sustain yourself. And look, if you're in it for the long haul down in Los Angeles as an actor, for example, and you really want to commit to this and you know, you don't want to come back home with your tail between your legs, filmmaker, screenwriter, whatever it might be, I'm talking film industry. Well, think of a plan that's going to help sustain you. And that's where practical is going to have to come in. But if you went, you know, year one, you put your life savings into it and then year two, you're just broke. Well, year two might be the year that you figured things out, but now you're so broke, you're just struggling and just barely getting by and you can't even eat. How are you going to put in a good audition every day? You know what I'm saying? So anyway, There's some other things too, boundaries. I just want to mention that. That was something we wanted to talk about being a part of the practical realm. So yeah, I'm excited about it. I think we're going to dig into this in an interesting way.
That was a great setup for some of the directions that I think we're going. What comes to mind with what you were saying is something that, you know, we've a concept that we've talked about on here before, which revolve around creativity itself, which is, you know, essentially creativity is a spontaneous thing. It's a spontaneous present thing. It has to be, otherwise it's contrived. And in a sense that this, in terms of the practical things that as artists you need to take care of, it's very much the same thing, which is what are the conditions you need to create in order for that creativity to thrive. And it's not a one size fits all solution. You know, I was saying to you before, I think that this is, and there's a degree, maybe even a high degree, of which you have to, where you have to start to know yourself, know your boundaries, know your limitations, know where you're strong, know where you're not so strong, right? And instead of fighting those things, you work with those things in order to create the best conditions for yourself. So like you gave that example of, because this is something that you hear from certain people who've succeeded in their field, and artists included, where they're like, oh no, you got to burn all your bridges behind you and don't give yourself an out. Well, that worked for them. And maybe that's because that's what they had to do in order to give themselves that best chance at success. That's actually how creatively they thrive, right? Whereas for someone else, that might not work at all. Because I've heard stories of actors who ended up finding themselves doing something else. I think of like Nick Offerman, who, you know, he opened a wood shop, you know, and he was doing that. That was actually how he was making his money, really. Like, he was still acting, right? He was still out there doing shows, and very, like, his passion for it was still very much there. But he also had this passion for woodworking, and you know what? This was something that was creating some stability for him, as opposed to putting him in a place where he's just like, oh God, I got it. Like, you know, that tension, that stress of having to make this creative thing the thing that's keeping you going, right? That for some people, that's just not going to work. Or for other people, it was just, oh yeah, I found myself doing this thing, and you know what? I was happy, and I was like, if this is what the rest of my life works out as, then you know what? I'm okay with that. And then they walked into that next audition because they were suddenly, there was a shift, right? Where there wasn't, that they weren't so hungry for it in, or maybe not hungry, like hungry is often very good, but like they weren't so desperate,
yes,
for it, where it was like they came in and they could just sort of be themselves because things were okay in their life. And now that gives you a springboard to do great work, right? When you have that opportunity. So I think that, you know, we can often get this idea from, you know, we get programmed, we get conditioned, we get influenced by other people's experiences. And hey, look, we got to take those in, but we've always got to take them with a grain of salt, because their life is not your life. And you need to know yourself, how you work. And, you know, it doesn't mean that at some point, hey, you know what, you can actually drop that other thing, right? Because maybe stuff is now just pouring towards you, mm-hmm, where it's like, and being open to that is great. But in terms of the lives of most artists and being it for the long haul, there's probably going to be some element to which you've got to have something else going, mm-hmm, right? For a lot of artists, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. I mean, you can find something else. You can bring love to something else that you're doing. And I think the big thing with that is you've got to make sure that it doesn't become the main thing.
Yes.
That is the trap. And I think that's where some of the people who have to burn the bridges is because It's like, well, if they don't burn the bridges, then they're going to get comfortable. They're going to neglect this thing entirely and they're going to be miserable for it. Right. So they got to do that thing, but you know, because they've also got to do that thing, they're also kind of blessed with this capacity to just be like, okay, I can fucking hustle in a kind of way that a lot of other people can't hustle.
Right.
Right. And good for them.
Right.
Right. But, you know, those stories are also pretty riddled with some pretty intense scenarios very often. And sometimes there's some pretty devastating crashes there too, right? Which are, you could say, is the opposite equal to the person who just ends up getting consumed by, you know, a 9-to-5 that has completely destroyed their creativity as well. So those are some of my initial thoughts and jumping off of what you said there, Brandon.
I have more initial thoughts. I think one thing that artists, whatever your art is you got to be careful about taking on other people's values. You know, because people will come at you with certain things like they have this perception of life and what life's supposed to look like. I heard this amazing talk the other day. This guy did a review of Mad Men, and I don't know who he is and I forget, but man, was he on the ball about this. But he points out that one of the things that's so great about the show Mad Men is he talks about how, he's like, what a lot of people don't realize, or at least he points this out, he's like, is that Mad Men is about a show about marketers learning how to convince people what a good life looks like. And he points out that like in the 1960s, like having a car and having like a blender and having a dishwasher, those aren't what made a good life. People didn't know that. But marketers came along and said, look what your life would be like if you had this appliance. Look what your life would be like if you wore this or did this or drove that or whatever. And we are the product of a sales pitch that happened like 60 years ago. And so what we think life is, what looks like a good life, was actually marketed to us and sold to us. And it was white picket fences and houses and cars and appliances and things like that. And so there's remnants of that in all of us today because this was pervasive. This is stuff that culture shifting stuff. Like when marketing rose kind of at that time, we were presented with these ideas and we bought it hook, line, and sinker. And so now we have a world, and it was a lot of the boomers, right? The baby boomers who adopted these type of concepts, and their parents too, but like it was a big thing, right? So now what happens is we have this image of what a good life is, and it's not necessarily true. And it was, maybe it was more accessible to have that kind of life at that time, you know, with just the way that real estate was and the way that like just inflation was and whatever, like certain things were accessible. They're not accessible anymore. So now you have people who are trying to grab onto something that's kind of out of date. And at the same time, we live in a different time. Like they lived in an industrial boom. We live in a technological boom. We live in an industrial, either you could say even keel or almost even downfall. But we live in a technological boom, which is very different. And, you know, creativity, that means also like we have access to creativity that, you know, our parents and grandparents didn't have. So there's complexities to our life that aren't the same as what they were. So if we try to take other people's values, especially older people who often have a lot of wisdom, and we, you know, there's something about listening to older people and listening to life experiences and paying attention and trying to take their advice, but also weeding out where they may be a little bit confused and a little bit actually manipulated and they don't know. And so I think with practicality, I think there's a certain amount of, you know, artists, well, I know this was true for me. I suppose I shouldn't speak for others, but it's like, well, okay, I want to be an artist and I want to be this filmmaker and this writer and this actor and I want to do this stuff, but I'm also supposed to own a house and a nice car and I'm supposed to have a white picket fence and a wife and kids by now, and I don't have that stuff now. And really, like, I want to put this money into my next film, but I should be responsible. I should put it into my house. I should put, you know, and they're both real. And you know, and then I look at some older people who didn't live their dream and they have regrets and they're like, I should have done this, I should have done that. And that's playing on my mind. And then there's other people who weren't responsible and didn't invest and didn't take care of their life. And, you know, that's, you can see how their life ended up and you go, well, I don't want that for myself. And the world becomes a scary place. No wonder we're riddled with stress and anxiety and all that stuff. And I think what's interesting about this conversation is that practicality for me at this stage in my life has been about how do I create peace and tranquility? Because if there's peace and tranquility and ease and I'm not stressed and I'm not worked out, that is a great playground for me to play. That's a great area for me to start to create. When I was younger, though, burn your boats was kind of, I bought into that. That worked for me. Doesn't work for me anymore. I'm at a different stage in the game, you know? So I think burn your boats maybe in your 20s, you know? Maybe like, just go for it. Just fucking, you're young. You can make mistakes. You can totally fall on your face. You still got time to kind of get back up. The world doesn't expect a lot of you yet. But when you get a little older, the world expects more of you. And you're kind of a joke when you're not living up to certain adult things as you get older. And it's just a reality. It's, you know, and you can say, oh, people shouldn't be like that. It's just, this is the way the world is, man. And, you know, you got to kind of figure out, you know, what you need at what time in your life. And right now, you know, practicality, keeping an even keel. Like I like that sailing analogy. That's what keeping an even keel is like, I want to keep this boat balanced. I don't want to be tipping on the edge. I don't want to be like almost capsizing. I want a nice, easy, calm. I want the sailing process to be smooth. I'm going somewhere and I don't want to, this, everything isn't a race for me right now, you know, but when I was in my 20s, fucking tip that boat right to the edge. Let's push this thing. Let's see what this baby can take. You know what I mean? Let's see if I can survive on just a few dollars this month and still eat and make it through. But as you get older, that story gets old. So anyway, those are a few thoughts. I mean, I'll just pass it back.
Yeah, I think that sometimes you have to kind of swing both, you know, to the far reaches of both sides in order to start understanding where that place is for you, right? Like, what are those conditions for you in order to creatively thrive the most in wherever you're at? And they might change, exactly. Like, you're changing and, you know, it comes down to, again, knowing yourself there's no one size fits all thing. We love those one size fits all things, and but they just don't work, you know, or at least if they work, they usually only work partially, but we always want them. And, you know, we always on this show talk about how it's like, look, like it's just part of being an artist and being a human is being honest and knowing yourself, right? And know thyself has been long in the annals of, yeah, of humanity, right? As one of the great quests of a life. And this is, I think, a huge part of it, you know, like learning how to be a creative human being. I mean, that's up there at the top for everybody, you know, whether you're an artist or not, but being a creative human being in the world is a high thing to aspire to. Right. And I think we are all that. We are all creative beings. And so we owe it to ourselves to figure out, okay, how do I do what I need to do so that I allow that myself to function as creatively as possible. Right. And again, it's going to be different for every single person. And having that honesty where you can say, okay, well, what are the things that I actually really care about right now? Like, what are the things, like, you always like, oh yeah, you know what? I care about not worrying how the fuck I'm going to keep the roof over my head next week. Okay. Right. That's good to know.
Yeah.
That's good to know. right? So, okay, so what does that mean? What do you need to change, right? What does that look like? And finding, you know, because we all need to, like, talking about practical things, we all need to make a little bit of money. Like, that's just a reality, you know, but in terms of you were talking about all of these influences from other people, like, oh, you know, as you get older, there is a certain expectation that seems to be put onto you, more like a higher expectation of what you should have at this point, like materially, you know, and where you should be and all of this stuff. And I do think to a large degree, most of that's fucking nonsense, but it is something that you have to contend with, right? And it is something that you have to be at peace with, right? You can't be in conflict with yourself about this stuff. You need to know exactly. It's like, okay, well, this is an expectation that my culture has on me at this point. Do I fucking care about that? Do I actually care? Do I personally, who I am as a person, do I actually care about this thing? Right? And without judgment on whatever it is, because there might be some of those things that again, I think it comes down to answering that question of, will this thing, does this thing give me that foundation for me to be more creative in my life, or does it take away from that?
Right.
Right. And you answer that question with the decisions that you have in front of you. Right. And it's like, okay. He's like, no, this is going to be something that's going to help me, or no, this is something that's actually taking away. It's like, okay, good. That's something that you know now about yourself, right? But there's no one there to just say, hey, here's the answer. This is what you got to do and whatever, because then you're just taking on someone else's thing and trying to make that thing work when maybe it doesn't work for you.
Right.
And that's you being in conflict with yourself.
Yeah.
You are your idea of yourself and who you think you are is in conflict with the person that you actually are. And when that's going on, it is so hard to be at your most creative.
Yeah, there's some interesting things coming up in this conversation. I will say, like, you know, I think if we can be totally free and autonomous and break away from culture and not, you know, and have a consciousness to not be totally influenced by other people, I think that is ideal and preferable. I don't think that people realize how much they are dependent on being accepted, and the, you know, being able to essentially, like, hang with people. So, like there's a, you know, there's a this idea that was presented to me when I was younger. It's like, it really sucks when you don't get invited to the table. And there are certain things that you need in life to be invited to the table. And there are many different tables in life. But to be invited to the table, you know, say amongst a wealthier group or a luxurious group, you know, you need a certain attire. You're going to need, there's going to be certain things you're going to need. You're going to have to be able to afford a $60, $70 steak meal plus drinks plus salad. And you're going to be walking away spending $300, $400, $500 a meal. And that's normal for them. And you want to be invited to that table. You want to sit with those people, have that meeting. That might be expected of you. And that's, I mean, here's the question. Do you want to hang with that crowd? And like, what makes that crowd so great? And people will have this kind of defiance, like, well, I don't fucking care. I don't care about those people. Forget them. But the, you know, that's just an example, right? There's also, you won't get invited to the table if you don't have the personality quality, if you're not cool, if you're not up with it, if you're not, you know, with it. So, you know, your group, whoever you associate with or connect with, they put pressures on you. And, you know, and when you're in your 20s, like for example, when you and I were in our 20s and everybody's an actor and an artist and we're all just kind of, we're renting and we're just by the seat of our pants, you know, we're just trying to make sure we pay for acting class. And then next is food. And then we're still trying to go out and have a good time. And there's a certain air of like, this is how we live. But if you try and live like a 20-year-old when you're 40 or 50, some people do it. Some people figure it out. I mean, I'm not saying it's wrong. Some people kind of do it and they navigate it. They're rare. It becomes more rare. But the thing is that if you begin to be a 50-year-old navigating like a 20-year-old, you're kind of that, you know, that cool free person, right? But at the same time, you're not invited to the table of the people that went down the more, responsible path, so to speak, right? And this is the thing, is that one of the pressures I think we often don't realize we have is that we want to be invited to the table sometimes, but maybe we don't always know if that's the table we want to be at. But the thing is leaving that table means leaving all our friends. It means that we're not going to be hanging with that crowd. And we like those people. We care about these people. We want to be involved with those people. But the problem is that we can't hang with them because, like, if you're struggling to just kind of eat and your friends want to go out and they want to spend hundreds of dollars on a meal, that's, you know, that doesn't align with you anymore. And you might like those people a lot. So then you have this pressure of how do I make the money to like stay with these people? Cause I want to be with them. But at the same time, I have this desire. I want to go make this film or I want to go pursue my acting career, and it's going to take sacrifice. And it means that I'm not going to be working a 9-to-5. I might be working kind of off shifts part-time just to kind of keep money going in so that I can kind of pay rent, but I want to be able to audition all day, you know, for example. And so you get into conflict of values, and that's kind of what I'm talking about. I think you brought in some fantastic points, all of which I forget half at least, but there's so many good points in here. And I think this is where we have to just kind of choose our values. And I think it's hard because, you know, you have your dream and you have your vision of like what you want to do in your life, but you also have your friends and you have people you care about. And, you know, and I think that practicality is about figuring out like where you can find balance and harmony. Because if you're just keeping up with the Joneses and you're just trying to have enough money to hang with the crowd that's, you know, like everybody's all about money, but yet you want to kind of be this artist that like doesn't make your life about money, you have a conflict of interest that's pretty major. And so you kind of are going to have to choose. And the people who you like might not understand it. I mean, I had people judging me when I was full-time screenwriting, pretty much. I was working on my career. I was making contacts. I was on my phone a lot. And I had to be in touch. It's like, you know, and I had people judge me about that. And it's like, well, I don't see you at work. I don't show up at your 9-to-5 and judge how you're turning a wrench. You know what I mean? But you see me because while we're out, I'm taking a brief moment to use my phone to touch base with somebody because they're a contact and that's how I'm going to make money. And that's what I do. And my job, it kind of is on and then it's off and then it's on and then it's off. And so when you're with somebody who they work and then they play, like they work and then they're done work, and then you're someone who kind of works and then you play and then you work and you play and it kind of happens all day, it's sporadic, you guys have this kind of conflict. You don't understand each other, right? And so, you know, either you you will find people who kind of get it and they understand it and they go, that's cool that you do that. Like, I'd love to do that, you know? But there's other people that are like, you're always on your phone or you're always kind of doing this or, you know, you have to say hi to everybody on the street. It's like, because I know all these fucking people. And if I walk by this person and they just see me blow by them and I don't say hello, like, that's a friend of mine. And like, you know, and that's, it's just different, you know? And the point is that I think, we have different demands on us depending on what path we're taking. And you know, for example, like I'll just share something. Like I'm kind of moving back into the film industry again. It's happening. It's pulling me back in, man. It's just happening. It's what's happening. So fine. I'm like, okay, you know what? It's fine. I'm getting the call back in, and I like it, and I'm not resistant to it anymore. So fine. But that also means that sometimes when you're in the industry, you're going to get called to go to a meeting or a party or something that, you know, and part of it's social, but part of it's work. It's just, you know, you got to make an appearance. It's part of the game, you know, and I want to be there. These are my friends, but at the same time, it's different, you know? And so I think what I'm talking about here is just, you know, find your practicality, I guess. You know, I like how you, I guess this is the thing that I'm coming back to, Evan. You talked about it being kind of personal. Like, it's kind of like you need to know yourself. So know what you need for you to do your thing. And don't look at someone else and say, well, the way they're doing it's right, so I must be wrong. No, the way they're doing it is right for them. Or at least they think it is. And do it the way you need to. And if it doesn't align with someone else, it doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just your way. Yeah, and I think that's a big part of this conversation for me. I feel like that's a very artistic approach to practicality.
Yeah, it's like practicality is really just about what do you need to take care of to give yourself the best, like the best circumstance, the best opportunity, the best whatever it is, you know? And I don't think it's usually a big thing. Like, practical, the word itself kind of it infers something simple, right? It's simple, it's doable, it's actable. Like, it's not necessarily something that's super demanding, right? It's practical. Mm-hmm. Right, this is something. And so I think that's a good feeling around that word. That's a good sense around that word for this discussion, is that, like, hey, yeah, these are things that are supposed to almost be like, try and set it and forget it, right? But learning what it is that you need to set is the real big part of the game here, right? Because that's it. You said it's kind of personal, and the more we're having this conversation, I'm thinking, no, I think it's deeply personal, right? It's deeply personal in terms of understanding what it is that you need to thrive, right? And only you can answer that. You can certainly get loads of ideas from other people, but, you know, trying to force ourselves to fit in the mold of somebody else is a real disservice to ourselves, right? I mean, certainly people can inspire us, or there might be elements of how a certain person approaches something that really connects, really lands, and that actually does help to inform us of oh, okay, you know what, maybe I'm going to do something like that because that really works for me, or something, or maybe I just need to put a little spin on that or alter it in a way, and that actually really helps me function in a way that I couldn't before. I want to come back to this thing that you said earlier in your last go round, I guess. And I love this image that you put about the table, right? What is the table that you want to be sitting at, right? And because and you touched on it, that, you know, a lot of the time the table that we want to come to, that we think we want to come to, we don't actually know if that's really the table we want to end up at, yeah. Right? Not really. It's just an idea that we have about what it would be like to sit there at that table. Mm-hmm. And there are so many tables out there,
yeah.
You know, metaphorical tables out there. But I don't, you know, I think that almost in a maybe a mythological sense, right? So much of the human journey that all of us are on is that story of of this person who's like, I want to sit at that table with those people, and, you know, and my life will be like this, and blah, 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 blah. And in that journey of trying to sit at that table, and maybe they come close, maybe they do even wind up at that table. And in that, they discover that it's not where they belong. That's actually not what they want. But because of that, not only do they know that, but very often in that story, in trying to sit at this one table, they actually, in that process, end up finding the one that they actually want to be sitting at, right? They, some part of it, they meet somebody or some group, and they don't see the thing that's right under their noses. It's like, oh, this is the place where I'm actually really happy. And they almost lose the thing that's right for them because they're so hung up on this idea, right? You know, that's that, if that, that's like, I can't think of a specific story necessarily, but it seems so familiar, right? We all know that story.
I'm an oil man, Evan. What a great movie for that, right? Like, I mean, just think about it. Like, you know, he's just like kind of a miner, right? Like, I'm talking about There Will Be Blood. He's just kind of a miner. He's just kind of a blue collar kind of guy. Like, and then all of a sudden he becomes an oil man. And he becomes a part of this fucking brutal world where people cut your throat. And, you know, he's like, my straw, I drink your milkshake, right? Like, I take yours. It's mine. I own it. Like, it's all, and that might be the table you're at. And you're just at this table of people that feed off of each other, and who has more power. And some people, like, they get involved in that game, right? And sometimes I think you get into a game where it's like, these aren't your friends. This is just the game you're playing, right? But, you go down a road far enough and you think, oh, this is what it, this would be wonderful. I mean, there's a, you know, like, I'm going to pass it back to you in a real quick second here. Just want to say, like, Hollywood is not the end all be all of film. I'm going to put that out in the world. It has been, but it's not the end all be all of the world. There are different people making new films now. There are women stepping up in the film industry and they're trying to find a voice. There are conservatives stepping up in the industry. The film industry is very liberal. I'm not saying one or the other. I'm just saying there are people with different opinions who have never had their voice heard. And there are ethnic people. There are people from different countries like Mexico. There are people from Europe who are stepping up and they're making film. And they have different values and different approaches and different ideas. And Hollywood had the table for a very long time. And I'm not saying Hollywood is bad. I'm just saying that everybody thought that's the table I need to sit at. And maybe that's not the table you need to sit at. You know, film is very different now. You can pick up a digital camera. You can use your phone. You can do different things. People are willing to consume things on YouTube and through social media in different ways. We're willing to accept media in all sorts of new forms. But one thing I found, and I think this is what kind of tethers me to the whole thing, because whether you're the Hollywood bigwig, the European artist, or the woman who's just trying to find her voice in film, whatever it might be, I have found my tethering point through all of these people is that great story lives beyond all of that stuff. And so I want to sit at the table of great storytellers. If I'm sitting at the table and it happens to be in Hollywood, that's fine. If it happens to be in Europe, that's fine. But at the end of the day, my value is story. And if anybody on these tables doesn't want to tell a good story, they want to manipulate people, they want to propagandize, or they want to just make money or use people, or they want to do something weird behavior that's toxic, I'm fucking walking away from that table. I'm not interested, and I don't need you. You know what I mean? And I think the thing is that if there's only one table, like there's, if Hollywood is the only table and you don't like the people at the table, I'm not like, again, I'm not picking on anything, but they're like, I've met, you know, that almost that cliche Hollywood person that's kind of ego and toxic and whatever. The fact, what I'm excited about now is you can walk away from that table and you don't need those people anymore. And the Harvey Weinsteins of the world, fuck them. Get rid of these people. You know what I mean? Harvey Weinstein used to fucking own the table. Now he doesn't. Now people like that have got called out. And I think that's fucking awesome. And I think for the artists, practicality is being able to say fuck you to people like that. And walk away from that table and be like, I got another table and it's a better table. And it might be a smaller table, but it's a better fucking table than this one. And I know that I'm swearing. I know I do that sometimes. But I just fucking want to empower the artists. And I believe in good. And people like that who abuse and manipulate power, I don't want artists to have to feel like they have to sit at that table. And part of my mission in life is to empower artists to be able to fucking stand up, throw their fucking napkin on the ground and say, I am done with you. I'm walking over to this table. And those people can look at you longingly. And you don't need them and you shouldn't be desperate for people like that. But there was a time where people were desperate and they compromised themselves and I feel very bad for them. And they were vulnerable. They were not weak people. There's a lot of people that judge these people. They were not weak. They were people that came from, you know, they got in situations and some of them maybe made weak choices. But at the end of the day, you know, my point is practicality. If you have options, you don't have to be desperate, you know? And I think that's where the practicality element comes in for me. But I'm an oil man, you know? You might not want to be in that world is what I'm saying.
Hey everybody, this is Evan, and this episode is brought to you by my book. Yes, I recently released a book called The Actor's Awakening, Connecting Spirituality to Craft. Expand yourself as an actor and your craft through a spiritual perspective. Take a journey that will explore universal philosophies and insights to help you understand human nature in a profound way, and develop practices to take your work to another level. Again, that's The Actor's Awakening, Connecting Spirituality to Craft, available on Kindle and paperback on Amazon. And as always, if you like the show, please subscribe.
Yes, sometimes Brandon and I, we get onto something where we're very in sync on something because I was just thinking, I'm like Harvey Weinstein. Yeah. And then it came out of your mouth like a few moments later. And I was like, Harvey Weinstein. Yeah. Like that was a price to sit at a table.
Yeah.
And some people walked away from that. And some people were willing to pay that price to sit at that table, you know, and that's not to make any judgment, like it's on whatever anyone's decision was. I mean, it's just like everybody is doing the best they can within their current set of beliefs and capacities. Yeah. And so I have no judgment on that decision. But when there's abuse concerned with things like that, you know, and that can be abuse from others, but there can also be a kind of abuse and violence that we inflict upon ourselves too in trying to sit at that table. And just know that somewhere there's a seat at a table for you, right? That's at the right table, that with the right people, that's, you know, it's somewhere, it's there. And it's in many ways, we're just all trying to find it. Yeah. Where's our, what's our seat at and at what table? Right. And and it doesn't mean that it's something so necessarily radically different. You know, like I've worked on professional sets with people at the top of their game, and you know they're you know we're on a set doing something that's very mainstream and whatever, and with like, you know, people who are pretty, you know, are celebrities and stuff like that. And what are they doing? They're talking with other crew members, they're talking with their cast members, like hey, when we're all done with this, like there's this thing that I really want to do. There's this thing that I really care about. Like I want to do this little indie movie, right? Because hey, even A-listers have a fucking hard time getting certain things done. And they have to go and just like, okay, we got to do this independent. We got to do this, you know, through other channels, and we got to rally some people together and do something that we really believe in. And so this is just like I'm bringing this up in the sense that you can find yourself at a place of success, but still find yourself like, oh, but there's something, this is not really what it's actually all about for me. This is not really the table I want to land at. There's this other thing that I'm really actually working towards. But also at the same time, it fits in with their conversation, because guess what? This show that they're a part of, that we're a part of, is paying the bills, you know, keeping the roof over their heads too, right? And it's just like, yeah, this isn't the main thing that I'm passionate about, even though I'm doing the thing that I'm passionate about. This particular thing is not really where, you know, I want to stay. I've got these other things too, but this thing allows me to do this other thing, right? Because it's putting me in contact with other people. It's keeping my chops fresh, because I'm getting to do the work that, you know, it kind of just continues on, right? No matter what. But there's always that sense of, okay, still taking care of some of the practical things, because it helps you to continue to do the things that you're passionate about. And you see that, you know, we'll just stick with sort of the film industry right now, because like we're finding the most out of that one for the time being. But it's a big artistic industry, maybe the biggest one, which it makes it kind of a good battleground for this conversation. Where was I going with this one, Brandon? Taking care of the practical things, even at any level, you're taking care of practical things. And just the practical kind of just like goes to a different level almost, right? Where it's like, okay, this is the practical stuff. Oh yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, there are so many actors that you see, and sometimes you wonder, how the hell did they get themselves caught up in this project? You know, like because you're like, this is kind of garbage, you know, like this is, you know, it's a big budget, you know, whatever, and it's not really a very big part, and it's not the best thing. It's kind of, as far as their ability and their talent, you're like, this is kind of beneath you on some level. But because they did this thing and they got that, you know, it got them that paycheck that allows them to continue to have their life and support their families and whatever it is, it also allows them to, oh, well then now I can actually do this other thing for next to nothing.
Right.
I can do this thing where I really get to like dive into this role, this dream role, this dream part. And I can do this character that I've just always wanted to do, but I couldn't do that if I didn't also every now and then just sprinkled those ones in there from time to time. And you see it like a lot of those, I'm thinking of a lot of sort of like great British actors, you know, great older British actors who just, you see them pop up and you go like, what the fuck are they doing in this movie? You know, like this movie is maybe even just trash and they know it's trash, right? But they go, it's like, hey, whatever, like, I get to do this. I show up for three. I do these every couple of years. I only have to be here for a week. You know, I do my thing. They still do a great job. Very often they steal every scene that they're in.
Yeah.
Right. And they just like, they still kill it. They elevate the material by their presence on it. And then they go like, all right, I'm back to London doing the West End or doing something off Broadway or doing, you know, this independent project, right? Because that's where my heart really is. So that balance that you have of maintaining like being practical in order to allow your creativity to thrive is always there.
Mm-hmm. Well, man, it's just, this conversation is cool. There's so many great things here. One thing is, I will say this, often artists don't realize how big of a deal they are. Like, you don't realize how big of an impact you have. And I found this not just with artists, but with people. Like, we just don't realize that we make more of an impact and more of a splash in people's lives than we realize. And I think that's something to keep in mind. Because, you know, you mentioned that kind of also like that's beneath you. But I do think that that's true sometimes. I do think where people kind of go, yeah, I'm doing this role just to make a buck and whatever. But I also sometimes think people, you know, these sometimes really great talents, they don't realize how great they are. And other people kind of see it, but it hasn't really caught on. And so they kind of get involved in stuff and, you know, I think this is a part of the human thing. I don't always think we realize like, that if you're being talked about or if people kind of are impacted by you, I don't think you always realize how much that's happening. And I think that's something to keep in mind in this whole thing. The other thing, I want to go back to this table analogy. I like it. One is, you don't have to sit at one table all the time either. There are different tables that you can kind of go like, tonight I'm going to this table and tonight I'm going to that table. And I think, there might be kind of the main table in a sense, your main group of friends you sit with, but there can be other kind of groups that are different. And I think it is nice when you're in a scenario where you have options, where you can go to different tables and you can kind of visit with different people and different, you know, different almost cultures or different types and whatever. And I think that's something that you can kind of afford and earn for yourself. So I think it's important not to get too tunnel visioned on this is the way, these are the people, this is the life I want, where like that might be the focus, but keep in mind there are other tables you might want to be at. So, which leads me to my further point, you know, life is about more than just creating great art. Sometimes it's just about having fun. Sometimes it's about being with your family. Sometimes those are actually the more important. That, and I feel like that's I don't want to skim over that, because you know, sitting at the table with your family might be the most important table of all for some people. And you know, maybe that's your chosen family, maybe that's your blood level family, whatever it is. But like I feel like sometimes we, you know, we might have a passion, we might have an art, and we really want to succeed at it. We really want to be great at it. We really want to do well. But I also think that there is a flaw in a person that makes that the most important thing in their life, because it is and can be important. And I think it should be precious. And I think it is, I think you should be grateful if you get to be an artist in life and you get to do something you love. I do really think that there is a lot of gratitude and appreciation to be had for that. But at the end of the day, I really think what really is going to matter are the people and the relationships you have. And there are just so many more important things than money and success. And I think sometimes we have to achieve a certain amount of wealth and success before we realize that, before we wake up to it. And hopefully in your journey to doing that, you don't destroy the loving relationships you have along the way. Like, those are much more important. And unfortunately, a lot of people find that out in hindsight, and then they spend a good portion of their life trying to repair damage they caused to things that matter. Practicality is not always just about making money and being successful. Practicality is about making sure you spend times with your, you know, your partner, making sure you spend times with your loved ones, your children, your grandparents before they pass away. Practicality is making time for things that matter. And it's, you know, a saying that I like is we treat time like it's infinite and we treat money like it's finite. And it's the opposite. Money, like one thing is that, like, in our culture, that is the devil's sale pitch, man. That is the devil's pitch, is that money is finite and money is limited. That is such bullshit. There's so much money out there in the world. Granted, you might not know how to get access to it. You might not know how to get it yet, but there is so much out there. There's so much resource out there right now, more than you even can fathom. There's so much, but time and energy and attention, that shit is running out and it's not coming back. And so you have that right now. And if you start appreciating time, attention, and energy as the most valuable thing you have, you'll find your value shift pretty dramatically. Most people they've been kind of, in my opinion, indoctrinated and brainwashed into believing that money matters more than time, energy, and attention. And that's why they spend their life ignoring their kids and working all day and doing this stuff. And it just really isn't the fucking case. And I can tell you, and I hope if you're listening to this, you fucking snap out and wake up from that if you're in that realm right now. Because I'm telling you, waking up too late, it's a fucking stark, I think it looks like the most brutal wake up ever. And what do you do after you've spent your life just fucking missing everything that matters? Yes, I do think it's important to learn to succeed, to learn to make money, to learn to understand resources and how to acquire them, how to get access. But I just think that not at the cost of some of these other things. So to go back to this table analogy one last time, to hang out at the Harvey Weinstein table came with a cost. And some people didn't compromise themselves, but some people did. But that meant you had to hang out with other people who compromised themselves, and you enabled other people compromising themselves, and you were part of that world. And the people that covered for someone like that, you know, to sit at that table, to stay at that table, they're complicit in a bad thing. And yeah, they were scared. Yeah, they didn't want to lose their livelihood. Yeah, there's a bunch of things, but I've talked about this on the last podcast. That's how bad people work. It's inch by inch, millimeter by millimeter, little by little. It's these little decisions. And, you know, we're talking about practicality. Selling out works inch by inch. You make little compromises. And pretty soon you're hanging out with bad people and you're one of them. And they welcome you at their table because you're bad too. That's a fucking, that's a brutal wake-up call to me.
There's something that you brought up, and it reminded me of something that my old acting teacher and mentor, Larry Silverberg, said to my class, which was, he said, acting doesn't fuel your acting, life fuels your acting. And you can extend that out and say, like, art doesn't fuel art, life fuels art. And it's always been that way. Life is the thing that has that created the necessity for art, right? Where life was the thing that created the conditions for art to occur, right? And it's that hasn't changed from the beginning to now. That has not changed. And it's an interesting thing that can happen when, and I, at a certain time in my life, I feel like this was happening to me, where I was so wrapped up in about being in this art that I was doing and just consuming so much of it, like, you know, everything I was reading was about acting and watching was about acting, and you know, it was all just about that. And don't get me wrong, I learned a lot through that process, but at a certain point in time, I felt this weird sense of estrangement with myself and my life, because I was like, I was just like, am I actually living and experiencing my life anymore? Because everything is so through this filter, or everything, my attention is so much on this thing that I don't even know if I'm paying attention to my life. Like, it's important, right? To the people and the place, like, these things are inherently, you know, like my family and my friends, and if we're all, you know, and yeah, important and meaningful to me, but I never thought about it in the sense of how is this fueling what I'm doing as an artist, right? It was just about trying to just use the art that I was in to be the thing that was fueling my art. And it doesn't quite work that way. Certainly you can be inspired by other artists, but really terrific art always comes out of something so naked or raw and honest about somebody's life or about something that's real about life and our experience, and giving that thing some expression. I mean, who, you know, comes to my mind are some of the great writers, you know, who, like, you look at someone like Hemingway. That guy lived some fucking life, man. Like, he's like fought through wars, and he was like, you know, he's a strange character, but his writing came out of these experiences of great horror and great beauty. Right. And yeah, he mingled and was social with a lot of many other tremendous artists at that time. And there was a certain hotbed, but it was more so like artists can't really take something that another artist did and just be like, oh, that's gonna, what you did just is gonna help. I'm gonna write my entire next book, because of this thing that you did. Like, it might spark something, but your main fuel is still coming from something else. You know, it's coming from that life that you have and that experience of life that you have, right? It's like art is not the real thing to a certain extent. I don't know how to, I'm trying to find another way to put this, that, because I'm trying to find a way to articulate the thought that's coming, that's coming through to me. But it's, yeah, you've got to go to the thing that you know something about, or maybe you know just a little bit about it, and you just need to go into it deeper, and that's what fuels it. Because there was just something else here that I was like, there was one last thing I had about sort of like Hemingway and that time and place, because I think it's easy to misunderstand, you know, because I think a strange thing happens to a lot of artists when they become, when their whole life just kind of becomes lived in this artist bubble. Especially if you become really successful and famous, I'm not a very famous person, but I can imagine that would present a pretty big challenge at a certain point, because your life becomes so different from most people's. You know, like suddenly your life becomes surrounded by people catering to you, and you know, you sort of want and need for nothing, and so many people just want a piece of you, right? You've got journalists who want a piece of you, you've got productions that want a piece of you, you've got, you know, your fans who want a piece of you, you got, like, there's just, everybody wants some piece of you. Right. And there's a price. I mean, that's another table to sit at. Right. And there's a price to pay to sit at that table that in many ways you can't put that one away. Like, I've recently heard a number of things that have sort of popped up in my feeds, I guess, of people who became very famous talking about fame and basically saying, like, it's not something that anybody should want, right? Unless there's something very specific that's very important that you want to do with it, right? But otherwise, there's an element to which it makes it harder for you to keep that connection to life, to sort of real life, because otherwise it can become so consumed in a lot of superficialities, I guess. And how do you create from that?
What a conversation, man. I feel like we've ventured out into space a little bit, although I do actually think it's still connected. And I kind of just want to reel it back in and tie it back in here. What I'm finding from this conversation is that practicality incorporates life into your art. And I don't think we always see it that way, and I think that's problematic. So, for example, to bring it this back down to a more grounded kind of just day-to-day thing is like the artist that has a part-time job. It's like you're like, oh, I wish I didn't have this part-time job. I wish I was just a full-time, you know, artist or actor or filmmaker, whatever the thing is you do, right? And it's like, yeah, but maybe look at it differently. Maybe look at how the job and the life, it serves you as more than just paying your bills. It's more than just keeping a roof over your head and keeping you fed. It actually is feeding you with life, and it's feeding you with something. Because if you did get what you wanted and you didn't have to work the job anymore and you didn't have to do any of this thing, and not to say that you even have to, but if you weren't doing that, you might not have these touch points to things. And so there's something about practicality, which I think is, you know, I don't think we often look at it this way, but it's kind of just like, where are my feet touching the ground? You know, like, and we're Way of the Artist here, you know, we're talking about kind of like walking your path, going your path or whatever. It's like, well, what am I walking through right now? Am I walking through mud? Am I trying to traverse a river? You know, like there's a certain practicality to that. And I think that's kind of should be embraced. I think it should almost be exciting. And I think, yeah, like, you might be looking at other people who are further up the path and you're like, man, I really want to be there. But I think practicality is kind of, but where am I right now? And like, let's do this thing, you know? And, you know, you can catch up or whatever, you can get there. But like, I think there's a lot of life that gets missed in trying to get rid of practicality so we can just get on to the thing we want. And I think we sometimes forget that the practicality was the point. I mean, one thing that I found with writing is that my well, that is very full right now, has a lot to do with the life I've lived, you know? And so, I'm so grateful for these experiences I've had now in context. But yeah, I mean, I think, I try to look at that now, like in the life that I'm in now is like, yeah, like there's a, you know, there's a practical to it all too. I would just say this, man. I mean, I think, try not to, my final note before we talk about beer and just wrap this baby up is like, try not to get too caught up in other people's values about what's the way to live and what's the right thing to do and how your life should look and how it should be, and try to connect to like, you know, what are you trying to do right now? And if practical is going to look different to you, then it's going to look different to someone else, and that's fine. I mean, I just know for me, just to kind of give this context, I'll just share this, is that practical for me is if I can make sure that like my bills are covered and I can eat and everything's good and I know all that stuff's covered, it gives me enough space and freedom to just know that I can just create with ease and I don't have to worry and I can keep my focus on the creativity. And I love that. So a big value of practicality for me is just creating an environment which allows that to flourish, this tranquil peace. It was different when I was younger. I didn't necessarily need that. But now I thrive when I have tranquility in my life and I have peace and ease. So part of my practical approach is create peace and ease. How can I do that? How can I root out drama and also just create peace and ease? And that's a very practical thing. And sometimes that's money, but sometimes that's making sure I connect with friends enough. Sometimes that's making sure I get out in nature enough, you know? And also another thing is this discipline. We've talked about this on the podcast, but for me, I used to write when I was younger. If you would have met me in my 20s, like, you know, I'm talking to anyone on the podcast here. If you would have met me, we would have been up till 3 a.m. writing our screenplays, because that's how I did it. I just stayed up all night and I let the creative muse take me over, and I would wake up at noon and crawl out of bed and figure out my day, you know, and that's just how I lived. And it was very artist. It was very like out there, you know, just that's how I did it. Now I wake up at 7 a.m. I get up, I make myself some coffee, I have a shower, and I sit down and I write, and I'm disciplined for like an hour or sometimes three or sometimes five, if that's how I feel like going or whatever. And it's just this very, it's the first thing I do in the morning. And then at night, I don't even want to look at any of that stuff. I just want to relax. And that's my routine and that's my discipline. But that works for me now. Totally opposite. One last thing I'll say just before I throw it back to you, Evan. I think art is designed to explain life. I don't think that life is designed to explain art. And let me explain. We use these analogies and these metaphors and we use all these things to try and say, hey, you know, it's like this and it's, you know, it feels like that. And life is so, there's so much nuance and complexity. Art is relatively simple. Art uses techniques to try to explain stuff. So like, for example, and I'll just, before I pass this over to you, one of the best analogies that was ever passed on to me is when I was a kid, I didn't understand computers. I'm like, people would say hard drive, RAM, processor. I'm like, what language are you speaking? This makes no sense. What the hell is anyone talking about? And then my friend went, basically it works like this, man. I have a desk. He's like, and I have a bookshelf and I have a bunch of books on the bookshelf. And the amount of books that can be held on the bookshelf, that's my hard drive. And the amount of books that I can have open on my desk, that's my RAM. That's how much I can actually have open and looking at on my desk at one point of those books. And he said, the processor is how quickly can I get to that book on my desk open to the page I want. I was like, well, that makes a lot of sense. Now I understand computers. And that's art. That's an analogy using art to explain. Whereas I feel like, you use art and we use art to communicate things in life that we can't really explain otherwise. And there's all these artistic tools, metaphor, analogy, foreshadowing, all this stuff. We use it to kind of, how do I express this thing that is unexplainable? Beer?
Let's do it. So this is one that when I brought it over, like, oh, we'll see how this one goes. We were a little unsure about it. And we're drinking the Velo by Four Winds Brewing in Delta, British Columbia. And it's a pale ale with lemon. And, you know, sometimes those sort of like with lemon stuffs or like with the citrus, they can sometimes go sideways. And I'll just say, you know what? I think this is really tasty. I've really been enjoying it. It's better than I thought it was going to be. It doesn't taste, because sometimes like it can taste unnatural. Yeah. And you're just weird little tang at the back. You know, it's like lemon juice, you know, like real lemon. You buy that stuff. And like, if you taste like the difference between an actual, like the juice from a lemon, or you take a little squirt of like that lemon juice that comes in a bottle and you're just like, why is there like a skunky taste in my mouth after this like stuff from the bottle, you know? And I feel like sometimes that's what beers kind of do with it. But this tastes really natural. And it doesn't, it's weird. Like it says contains barley, wheat, oats. It doesn't say it also has lemon in it. It doesn't say lemon flavor or anything like that. It just says barley, wheat, and oats. But I feel like there's real lemon in there, because that's like actual lemon, because it's good and it's nicely balanced in there. It's not overpowering. It's just kind of nice and refreshing. And, you know, Four Winds, I forget about these guys. You know, I forget about them all the time. And they, I don't know if I've had a bad beer from them. I think they're great.
I agree with you on the beer, man. It's I wasn't sure what I would think, and I don't like artificial flavors, but it doesn't taste artificial. It's been nice. It's been refreshing. I'm delighted. It's been surprisingly good, like in a way that I didn't expect. And now maybe my standards are low, and so like I didn't have high expectations coming in. So take that as you will. But anyway, no, this has been enjoyable, man. Very good beer. I'm happy with it. I'll wrap up my thoughts and I'll pass it to you. My thought is this: practicality is a little bit more complex than I think it sounds on the surface. I think money is an element. We have to figure out how to keep the roof overhead, keep ourselves fed. I think that that is the very beginning of practicality. What I've discovered in this conversation, and I would say is like something I'm going to think about, is moving my perception of practicality into realms that are beyond money and just kind of, you know, keeping the lights on. Because I think a lot of my life is like, got to be practical, is all just about money. It's always been like that. But practical is like, no, I got to make sure I'm practical. I got to make sure that I stretch my body. I got to stay loose. I got to stay like, you know, healthy. I got to make sure I eat some good food so that I have some energy. I got to make sure I see my friends every now and then because I spend too much time alone. Even if I'm creating all the time, that's not great. And also like maybe I need to get out into nature a little more here and there and, you know, and just, but not too much. Be practical. Don't just go and play all day and like just fuck off on all responsibilities, because that's not good either. But I think what I love about these conversations is that I always walk away with like more nuance on an idea. I come in, I think I understand it, and by the end of it, I have a much better handle on it, and I feel I can do more with it, and that's exciting. And the other thing I just want to say, Evan, I really do appreciate that in these conversations, you're willing to sometimes go to sometimes those darker, more shadowy places, and we pull ourselves out of it, but I like that we are willing to visit them, even temporarily, because I do think that sometimes that's an important part of the conversation. And I appreciate that you're willing to give both of us, you know, a forum so that we can just visit it and just make sure that it doesn't just get skimmed over. Because I do think like that we talked about the sitting at the table, and I think, yeah, maybe I did bring it up, but you kind of helped me and you gave the floor where we could talk about, yeah, there's that table that sometimes you think you want to sit at and you really don't want to sit at it. And I like that that came into a practicality conversation where it's like, no, I thought I wanted this table and now all I want to do is walk away from this table. And in fact, you know, maybe this will stop people from working so hard to sit at a table because they'll see that it's not a good table to sit at before they even go to try to sit at it. And they won't put their energy and effort into that because, you know, and maybe you'll make your own table. You know, we talked about tables a lot. But anyway, it was a good analogy. It was a good metaphor, right? So anyway, your thoughts?
Yeah, I like this. I like the sitting at the table thing. I thought that was a nice little driver for a lot of this conversation. I mean, yeah, I think that, you know, in terms of, yeah, talking about practical matters, practical concerns, I mean, certainly I think that money very often is a big part of it for people, but it does extend beyond those things. There's lots of other practical concerns that we have in our life that, you know, again, I think it's about, to a large degree, it's about simplifying things, right? Like it's how do we just meet just the needs that of living of that are required to just meet the needs of living, where I have enough, you know what I mean? And I think that that's maybe the big part of the problem, is the sense that we don't have enough, that we're not enough. But when you really look at what we actually really need to live and to function as human beings, it's not a lot. It's really not a lot. And, you know, I think it was one of Dan Millman's books, and I remember it striking me pretty hard at that time, and it's still pretty profound thinking about it now. But I he'd said something like, once you've met your needs as far as you have food to eat, you have shelter, you have clothes on your back, and you're happy, like once those things are met, your happiness is up to you. You know, like it's like if you have all of these things met and you're unhappy, that's kind of on you.
Right.
And it's like, it's kind of like, whoa, holy shit. That's almost a radical thing in our culture to think about, right? It's like, no, you got to have all this. You got to have all this stuff, but we got to have all this, you know? And it's like, but life is unpredictable and full of all kinds of shit that can happen. And being practical, being simple in how we approach meeting requirements, and even saying like, okay, you know what, just make sure I have a little bit here, you know, like if sometimes with money or something, it's like, let's just make sure I have a little bit away in case something happens, right? But that's actually not that hard to do. You know, like having a lot of these things, again, practical is very often, it's like, these aren't super complicated, right? These things can come together quite easily and don't necessarily have to take up a ton of time in your life, but they are absolutely essential in you being able to live, right? And live creatively in your life, whatever that is, whether you are a quote unquote artist or not, but being a creative human being, being able to do things that foster sort of the life that is yours, you know, that is truly really yours, that is at the table that you belong at, right? What are the things that just help you do more of that? You know, it's like in the Western world, there's that saying of like, living, are you living to work or working to live, right? And in many ways, we're talking about that working to live thing, right? And live not just in the sense of just sustaining, but living fully as who you are in the world, right? And what are the conditions that you can meet practically that just allow you to do that, to be more of that, and to step into that more? And again, things can change, you know, things can really change. Maybe you need to do something that is something like a job, and you got to take a little bit of work on in order to just take care of these concerns so you don't have to be concerned about it anymore. It's not taking that energy from you anymore. And that allows you to really go and do whatever your art is or whatever this passion thing is, and you can do it. And then maybe at some point that thing actually becomes something so big for you that you don't need that thing anymore. But now it's because that thing is now meeting the practical things where it wasn't before, right? And sometimes you can't force this shit, right? You can't force life open. And people who do try to force life open are usually psychopaths. Yeah.
You know, we didn't really talk about this on this episode, but I think, you know, the desire to make your art be your practical thing is sometimes a wish you don't want to get granted too early. And I think that it puts pressure on your art and it might stop you from actually creating in the way that you like to create, because anything that becomes like a thing you do to make money, there's like I found, not always, but there can be kind of it's just not the same anymore. and it can put a pressure onto things that is not natural anymore. And I, you know, for a period of time, I was making money just from screenwriting. And what I kind of walked away from is like, I can do that now probably with a lot more maturity, but I have to write no matter what, as though I'm not making a dollar. It's much better for me. I just write better. But if I'm writing to try to make someone happy or try to appease them, or, oh man, it's not great for me. And I mean, I'm sure that there are more experienced people out there, or people who have figured kind of out how to navigate that. But my point is just this, is like, sometimes it's good to have a job where you make money that's separate from your art, because it keeps your art pure and it actually keeps that thing kind of fun, and it might make you write better work. And, you know, and I think ideally, you know, you maybe, you look at your art, like, the goal should always be like, I need to make money as an artist, and that makes me a successful artist. I don't think it does. I think what makes you a great artist is creating great art that is true, that is real, is authentic, that expresses something, some kind of magic comes out of you and whatever. And you figure out the techniques and you figure out the ways to express it and do it. And it just, I think that's the win. And I think those are the values that you need to kind of put on the art, and don't let practicality pollute the purity of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really like, does it compromise your art? Does it compromise the creativity? And yeah, as we've been saying through this one, like, that's something that we all need to figure out for ourselves. And there will probably be some missteps, some directions that we go that we find is like, oh, okay, no, you know, it's a house of mirrors out there a lot of the time, you know, and it's hard to know where you're going or what you're looking at necessarily, but you know, you go forward and you find out, right? And you respond and you adjust and you start to figure out what that thing is, because yeah, we're all different, and it's a good thing that we are, and we shouldn't be all trying to force ourselves into some model that I think that's been put on us to a large degree, that, well, no, you're all supposed to just, yeah, you burn your bridges and you will your way through everything. And if you didn't succeed, well, then it's just because you didn't fucking will hard enough. Yeah. And it's just like, well, no. Like, that's like that, again, that works for some people, right? Practically speaking, they have to burn their bridges because if they don't, then they compromise themselves. They need that pressure, because it actually helps them creatively. But for other people, that just shuts them down entirely. So it's not really for us to judge, but it's just for us to learn and to understand what that is for ourselves, and to make sure that we really honor it.
Thank you for listening in on our conversation today. We hope you found something helpful that you can carry forward with you. Head over to our website, wayoftheartist.com, for more free exclusive material and learn about the show. If you haven't already, please support us by subscribing to the show, sharing it with people you know, and keeping compassionate, creative conversation going.